go with the volume.
Good morning, my name is Kanye Sanjonja. I'm the media liaison officer for the Lydia Bixis from the Department of Public Works.
Thank you.
I'm Devon Pillay from the Department of Public Works.
Thank you.
Shangalani Mjali from the Department of Public Works.
Thank you.
My name is Henan Falyun. I'm the attorney for ETSA.
Thank you.
Hi, I'm Isaac. I'm a legal assistant from the CBE.
Thank you.
Beki Zulu from the Council for the Built Environment.
Saroj Motley from the Council for the Built Environment.
Thank you. Roshan Kame, Ministerial Rep on the Engineering Council of South Africa. Then you should be sitting with your colleagues. If you are a ministerial representative from Public Works, you must sit with the Public Works team. Thank you very much for the introduction.
I'll move up. I'm Truman Gova, President EXA.
Thank you.
Hello, I'm Hugh Hanrahan. I'm on the EXA delegation.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen. Well, I should make it clear. I think EXA is not appearing before the committee today, isn't it? So you're just observing the discussion. Mm. Okay, thank you. Now continue.
In Uganda from EXA.
Thank you.
Vali Nayaka from EXA.
Eric Hay from EXA.
Thank you.
Bob Pullen from EXA.
Yes.
Thank you. My name is Doris Nguyen.
Thank you, honorable member. There was a gentleman with his hand up at the back.
Are we with our Institution of Civil Engineering?
Yes. Do you mind, ladies and gentlemen, to fill the chairs here? Yeah, there's so many other chairs, including here in the front. So if people can take their seats, and my secretary will note them and give them the necessary if they are invited. Honorable Magubane, you will have to introduce yourself.
Good morning, everybody. Mr. Makubane, member of this committee. Thank you.
Thank you very much. If there's anybody who did not have an opportunity to introduce him or herself, I think they will do so during the discussion. Now, I need to also put across the procedure. Only the invited guests will be able to make oral presentation. So people will be given an opportunity to make a presentation plus or minus for an hour, and then we will entertain discussions. So all other people who are playing observer status today will not be in a position to speak in the meeting. They can only do so as and when they are presenting on the allocated day. And honorable members, I'm also advised that the parliamentary legal advisors are not in today because they've attended the Communications Portfolio Committee. So some of the legal questions we'll have to take note thereof and deal with them at a later stage. But I have not seen Jessica today. Oh, she is here. And the other gentlemen from the department who are part of the doctors are here to take note of any legal questions that might arise during the discussions. So, without any further ado, let me allow Mr. Sazifo Vilakahle to take us through his presentation. I'm going to request you to be a little bit loud. I realize that you've got a very soft voice to allow members to understand. So everybody needs to use this gadget before them for recording purposes. So it will be compulsory for all who are here to use the microphone because we are taking record of the proceedings. Thank you. May you then address us, please.
Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. I'm happy for getting this opportunity so that I can pass my contribution. I am in the field of quantum surveying. I'm having a Bachelor of Technology in quantum doing at Pretoria Technical. I must say I am very in support of the bill when it raises the point on page 12, item 2.5, access to professions, that we are 14 years into democracy and we have shortage of previous disadvantaged professionals in the sector. While this is admitted a product of many factors which government is addressing, this is also a product of lack of coordination between the various professional councils regarding this issue. Maybe this bill will finally provide a platform for the previous disadvantaged graduates to show their true potential. I believe that a lot of power has been given to the statutory bodies which are meant to regulate registrable professional professions. These bodies seem to be on mission to make it very hard for any graduate graduating from University of Technology to obtain a professional status, while those who graduated from traditional universities enjoy different treatment. It is my opinion that the reason for this behavior is based on race more than anything. Mostly, the previous disadvantaged are the ones who graduated from these new universities. The very fact that the University of Technologies and Technicons are recognized by the government and the course of the content offered by these prestigious professionals is validated by international bodies means that every graduate graduating from this institution with relevant experience should be given full professional status. In conclusion, on page 23, under item 4.5, access to built environment professions, which shape phase, although professional bodies under SACPP will retain their role in determining qualifications which will be entitled holders. Therefore, to registration is new registrable category in terms of new legislation, the minister will be responsible for prescribing the said qualifications, as well as both academic practical training and examination that will be prescribed in order for professions to qualify for registration in terms of new legislation. I have a question regarding the above. Will the minister publish the criteria used when prescribing the qualifications as well as both academic training necessary? Thank you.
Do you mind to repeat the question a little bit closely?
Will the minister publish the criteria used when prescribing qualification as well as both academic training necessary?
Thank you, Chairperson. Thank you, Presenter, for your input. Do you feel that the Minister of Public Works must be responsible to determine the qualifications necessary for the completion of this course? Is she not interfering in the position? You know, is there not a conflict between her? Will there not be a conflict between the Minister of Public Works and the Minister of Education?
relation to the responsibility of the Minister of Public Works being the one prescribing, as opposed to it being done by the Minister of Education. So he's trying to solicit your view on this matter.
I'm trying to say that after this discussion that we have made, the minister is the one who's having, who can prescribe.
The Minister of Public Works?
The Minister of Public Works.
Prescribe?
Yes.
Okay. Okay. Is there any further questions, honorable members?
Chairperson, I just want to check the admission requirements to a University of Technology and a normal university. Is it the same? Is the duration of your studies in a university and in technology, is it the same? Can you enlighten me on that, please?
Myself, since I started in 1999, enrolling my studies at Technical Natal, I had to go for first year full-time, and then at the second year, I had to undergo training, and say what they call it, and say the training, and then you had to go and then you submit your assignments. On a third year level, you go back to school full-time, and then fourth year, to your Bachelor of Technology full-time. And then for Bachelor of Technology, you had to do it for 3 years, and then you qualify for Bachelor of Science. And then for BTEC, you had to do it for 4 years, which doesn't make too much difference.
I think, honorable members, you remember how this point arises. As part of the presentation made, we also entertained a discussion that said that people who come from universities are expected just to make an oral representation, whereas those who come from University of Technology are expected to write exams. I don't know. Can we get help just to clarify that point again, Mrs. Beatrice? Can somebody reiterate that point, because we did discuss it last week. Is there anything you can take and further elaborate on that point?
Air on that.
It's the issue around registration. Remember, there's a process where you are expected to only do an oral presentation, others are expected to write an exam. I think the matter relates to that. So the honorable member in this case want to know what then is the difference between a person who comes from an ordinary university and any university of technology, and he then explained the process. Or maybe we should flag it for further discussion. Unfortunately, sir, you cannot make inputs for now. As I indicated earlier on, we take one at a time. If you have noted an issue, you can note it when you present, you'll be able to deal with it. Thank you. Any follow-up questions on Honorable Opperman? We'll come to that point later, because I think the justices are still consulting on that one. Any further questions on Honorable members? Then that brings us to the end of the presentation of Mr. Villacasa. Thank you very much for heeding our call and coming to make a presentation. Mm-hmm. I hope all members are having copies of the bill itself. We can't give you copies all the time. We can only give to a visitor. Don't want to cut more trees? Okay. Then in terms of the program, the next person to make a presentation is the Chamber of Mines. I think there's a lady from the Chamber of Mines.
Good morning to everybody once again, and Madam Chair. Thank you very much for the opportunity to the Portfolio Committee to invite the Chamber to make this presentation, and a special thanks to the Committee Secretary, who is incredibly patient and pleasant with our telephone calls. The Chamber of Mines is an employer organization which represents employers in the mining industry. Now, the mining industry does employ a number of engineers and other engineering personnel who require registration with the Engineering Council of South Africa. We do have a number of engineering personnel who are registered with the Project and Construction Managers Board. The comment that the Chamber would like to make, firstly, is on the funding that is proposed in the bill. We are worried about the sustainability of the funding model. At the moment, we understand that there isn't enough funding for the current bodies that are in operation. Now, we know that the bill is making an assumption that there will be increased membership, which hence will increase the funding. But there is an assumption here, and it's not a concrete model, and we are worried then about the sustainability of the funding. The bill is also suggesting that there will be cross-subsidization of one professional body to the other, so the bigger bodies are likely to fund the smaller bodies. Certainly we are of the view that the revenue should be enough for each professional body to support itself. We are also suggesting that in the memorandum attached to the bill, they said there's no financial implication for government in this bill, and we're finding that a concern, in that if the funding model is not sustainable, where is the funding going to come from? Is the public going to have to pay more money to fund these bodies, you know, which is an extra expense on those individuals who have to register? What we also find interesting in terms of the government funding is that the minister ultimately, in terms of the bill, makes final decisions, and yet there's no funding from the government. So the minister can make all the decisions, but they don't need to pay for anything. And we feel it would be a more equitable funding model to have the government at least prepared to fund any shortfalls. Our next comment we'd like to make is in terms of education and training. We support the idea that the professional bodies do have a role in education and training. However, in terms of the bill, we find it difficult to understand the roles and responsibility of the council vis-a-vis the current legislative framework for education and training. At the moment...
In this context, what is the council?
The council, the South African Council for the Built Environment, as proposed in the bill. Presently, there is the South African Qualifications Authority that takes responsibility for the National Qualifications Framework and all qualifications that are registered on that framework. And while the bill does say that it will take into consideration SAQA, the South African Qualifications Authority, when we did approach SAQA 2 days before the submissions were due, they were unaware of this proposed piece of legislation, which we found a bit disconcerting.
What do you mean by that? Did you say by when were they not aware of this piece of legislation?
2 days before comment was due, when we approached SAQA, they were not aware of the bill.
Before you continue, can I have any indication whether a policy workshop was convened to discuss the policy perspective with stakeholders?
Yes, honourable members, we had a number of consultative forums. One was specifically for public sector, but over and above that, we have engaged with the Department of Education to deal with the matters, and they raised certain issues which we have taken into account.
Thank you. May you continue, please?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Given that there is the South African Qualifications Authority that does have responsibility for all education and training qualifications that are registered on the National Qualifications Framework, we are not too sure when we read the bill what the roles and responsibilities of the council as proposed in the bill is going to be. Further, the present Act, the South African Qualifications Authority Act, is in the process of being repealed and will be replaced by the National Qualifications Framework Act. The National Qualifications Framework Bill is currently in a hearing process at the moment. And this is no doubt likely to impact on the education and training that is being proposed through this bill. Another comment we want to make in terms of the education and training is that there are formal and work experience qualifications that are currently being designed through the engineering standards generating body. What we refer to as a stage one qualification is a formal qualification that people obtain through a tertiary institution. But we are concerned about the stage two engineering qualifications, which is the work experience qualification. We are a bit worried that not much has been said about the stage two qualification, and we would request that the stage two qualification, which we feel is vital for engineers, does continue. Another comment we would like to make is the continuing professional development. We feel that this is a very important area, and we know that in many other professions, this continuing professional development has been fraught with problems. And the bill does have a section on it, but it doesn't elaborate much on how and what is actually going to be done in the continuing professional development. And the section relating to regulations is silent, that regulations may be drafted in terms of the continuing professional development. And we would request that there is some more clarity in terms of the continuing professional development. On the issue of the composition of the council, provision is made for representation of the community, and we know that it's common practice for many statutory bodies to have the community represented. But if we have a look at the National Qualifications Framework Bill, they're suggesting that we move to what is called communities of expert practitioners who will be represented on various bodies. And we would suggest that perhaps this is an area that could be considered, so that the people who are represented on the council are at least expert practitioners, so that they can add value to the council. Secondly, in terms of the community, we would suggest that NEDLAC is a platform for the nomination of constituency representatives, particularly the representation from community. We found that this has been problematic in the past, and NEDLAC does provide a platform where the community can at least approach community representatives who may serve on the council. Secondly, our second comment on the composition of the council is that there's a fair deal of representation on the council provided for education representatives, and we certainly support this because we do think that education in terms of the functions of the council is very important. However, in the policy document, there was mention made that the practical training has been problematic. And we see this practical training as a very important component for engineers to become competent. We would therefore request that consideration is given to these on-job providers, in other words, employers who provide on-the-job experience, to be represented on the council. They do play a vital role, and I think that they should be, we feel that they should be represented in the council. Lastly, our comments on the rationale for new legislation. When we read the policy document and the new bill that is being proposed, we were of the view that the implementation of the current legislation appeared to be problematic. And we felt that would it not be preferable that the current legislation is implemented rather than proposing new legislation, and is this substantive rationale for new legislation rather than just implementing what is there? We do understand, you know, that the policy document is wanting integration, coordination between the bodies, but will new legislation bring that about? Is there not going to be problems with the implementation of new legislation? Thank you very much, Madam Chair.
Thank you very much. Honourable Members, I think the presentation is before you. I might have to ask a lot of questions myself, but as usual, I'll give preference unto your good self to start with the engagement. Honourable Rotubu.
Thank you, sir. I just want to seek a clarity on the question of the current legislation that it must be implemented to, whether by implication.
I missed some of the words.
So. Okay. Now, I think the thing that a chamber of mine saying that the current legislation must be implemented, does that by implication mean there is no reason for us to come up with a new legislation to align the council in terms of the responsibility of the CPE, in terms of the coordination? Is that what it implies? And if so, what informs her to take that direction? She also mentioned the fact that SACWA is the Department of Education is going to revamp SAC. And it means, therefore, that she doesn't see any reason for us to continue with this legislation without having ascertained ourselves in terms of role and responsibility of SAC, in terms of the education position. Now, my question is that Do they mean that we can only wait for whatever outcome in terms of the process of the Department of Education in terms of dealing with the question of SACWA? But I also take into account what the department has said in terms of the consultation with all the stakeholders during the policy process to ensure that at least the Department of Education is aware of this piece of legislation, and therefore the issue of SACWA is no longer an issue, might not be an issue at this point in time, given the participation of the Department of Education in the process of consultation. I will stop there for a while.
Thank you, Honorable Member. Let me welcome the Parliamentary Legal Advisors Advocate Adikase and your colleague. We're happy to see you here. I thought you were busy in communications. So.
Sorry, Madam Chair. Thank you. Our communications committee was shifted to 2 o'clock, so I could actually fill in here.
No, thank you for attending. And any other person who just arrived? Honorable Opperman?
Thank you, Chair. The presenter also referred to the importance of the second stage. I think during the previous presentation, there was a problem. Some take 3 years, the others must take between 4 and 5 years. Would you like to comment on the discrepancy between the two? And what do you think of compulsory registration? Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Professor. The presenter made mention of the implementation of the current legislation. She mentioned that it looks like it is a problem. If she feels that strongly, how does she feel about the present organogram of the current legislation? And she made mention of NEDLAC. That NEDLAC should nominate the community representative. And then, does she not maybe trust the minister in nominating the community representative? Thank you. Honorable Member, I've got a number of questions here that I would want to ask. In relation to this presentation, which I me first start with the issue of not enough funding for the body. I don't know on which basis are we saying that. Because if you look at the current organogram as it stands, there was limited activities by a certain professional council on the basis of their size, which limited your registration. For instance, if you can take the example of SACLAB, I think SACLAB is one of the smallest organizations which cannot generate enough revenue to function on its own. I normally make a joke in the committee and say it functions from the briefcase. If we can look at the office from the registrar itself, I think the registrar multifunctions in terms of responsibilities. And on the basis of challenges that the professional councils themselves have been raising to us as members of parliament, at some point we therefore suggested that there is a need to relook at the current legislation as it stands. How does it benefit these professional councils? It was on the basis of the reports that we entertained in this meeting, which we believed as MPs that we need to relook. We therefore mandated the department to go and look at the structure, whether is it feasible for the professional council to operate. Therefore, on those basis, we therefore said that let them come with a policy framework which can enable us to make this professional bodies function professionally. And if we can look at the memorandum on the objects of the bill, the background that is provided is very clear in terms of what are the intentions of bringing in a new legislation. I'll come to that argument later, but I want us to deal with the one first with the funding. We realize that the bigger bodies, excise, a typical example, is given the nature of the work they do. I mean, some will have more and some will have fewer, because CIDB indicated in terms of how many graduates do we have, it shows there is a point where you see limitations in terms of how young graduates are able to register. There is a challenge. Now, we ourselves, when we got the presentation, we wanted to know what is the funding model that the department is going to put in place. We then tasked the department to give us a document that will reflect the financial implications of the establishment of the SACBE. And indeed, a document was presented that was passed. I don't know whether you have a copy yet. Okay. Of which at some point, I think before we even leave this meeting, we'll ask Mrs. Pitko or Jessica or anybody else to take us through to discuss this matter. I would want you specifically to speak on this issue. Because to me, it remains an assumption that there is not enough funding, and you raise the question that there's an assumption that there will be increased membership. To me, it's given the current membership as it stands, if you form one body, it itself means that the current funds that are already sitting in other structures will also be able to serve the entire body. But I think we can debate that. The issue of subsidizing SACBE, it's an issue that I've already dealt with, that we did request a funding model to be presented to us, and indeed to us. And any organization that has been established by an act of parliament is funded by the state. Actually, CBE and all these professional councils in the state, they have been funded by government. So it's not a new thing altogether. They were funded. So I'm not sure what you mean by that. I think you'd have to unpack what you mean by public funds being utilized and what are the financial. I think you need to unpack it so that we understand. Because in the current juncture, as an act of parliament that established it, it's already getting public funds. They are regulated by the PFMA, their account in terms of how they use their funds. So it's a public organization as it stands. Because I thought, as it says in the background, that it's the intention to deal with issues of access to the professions, transformation, deal with the lack of macro strategy for the built environment profession and other shortcomings in the present regulatory model. So do we differ fundamentally with that objective? if we do, I've not yet heard someone saying that maybe the people will deal with that at some point. Whether you differ with the model that is being proposed currently, because if you say, why a need for a new structure, is it, do you differ with the objective that seeks to integrate, or what is the argument? Is it on the basis of financial implications or what? I think we need to have more substantive issues that differ with why it is stupid, because I think in the background it's very clear what it seeks to achieve. On the issue of the minister making decisions, I think I'll unpack that. I just want to hear what are the views of the rest of people who make presentations and all. But on issues of the role of communities, I think we always diminish the role that communities need to play in the institutions of government. I think I need to be given more clarity as to why shouldn't it, in the current juncture, allow communities to participate and only leave processes to technocrats. If you look at how organizations make decisions, and I want to use an example of the cartel that connived on the prices of bread. You see, if there were community structures being part and parcel of that, they would not have fixed the price of bread, because communities would have represented the interests of ordinary people in that structure. But because we had a group of monopolies that wanted to have more money, it was easy for them to agree on the price fixing. It's given. So to dilute that thinking, you need to have people who would not share necessarily the same experience and expertise to put a different perspective to balance the views at all times. I think it's imperative in this case. Well, we'll talk to the issues of the regulations. I think you need to clarify more what you mean, because I suspect that you are preempting what will be in the regulations. Well, to clear that fear, we requested at some point that the department should provide us transitional arrangements that will show what will be the regulatory framework that will ensure that we don't disturb the current growth in terms of registration and accreditation of professional bodies. So at some point that document will be presented. I would suggest that you follow the discussions, because we also raised the matter as the committee. I'll come back for other questions. Let's just deal with the few, and then we take the process forward. Let me give you the opportunity to respond.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair. Lots of questions. I hope I can remember.
What sort of for that?
Yes,
you can't. Well, I thought you were noting, but
I've got some notes. One of the first questions was referring to the current legislation, where we are saying the current legislation is there that provides for integration, coordination among these bodies. And the policy document that we read was saying that this is not happening. Now, the bill, my understanding is that it allows for this to happen as well. If it didn't happen in the current legislation, what is going to make it happen in the new legislation? We're just not understanding the rationale for bringing in new legislation to provide for integration, coordination, and a number of other things, if the current legislation also provides for it. So that was our comment about that. We just didn't understand the rationale. For us, it didn't seem to be substantive rationale, because that appeared to be a lot of the reason for the new legislation, if it's currently there. So is it not really an implementation issue rather than writing new legislation?
No, we'll come to that. Let's go to the response. If there is a follow-up question, we'll come back.
Thank you. Then there was a question about SACWA. We're not suggesting that this bill is put on hold until the SACWA and pieces of legislation, mainly the National Qualifications Framework Bill, is finished. But we do acknowledge that what is being proposed in this bill, in terms of the council will control and exercise authority in respect of all matters affecting education and training, needs to take SACWA into account, because at the moment they're the body that actually controls all education and training. The council will indeed have an input into education and training relating to these qualifications, but SACWA at the moment has that authority. The National Qualifications Framework Bill is also going to establish a new body called the Council for Trades and Occupation, the Quality Council for Trades and Occupation, and no doubt this, the Council for the Built Environment would have to liaise with them as well, but it's silence on that. So we're just not sure how the relationship is going to be between SACWA, its new role, and the role between the three quality councils that are being proposed, how those are going to happen. May I continue? Okay. There was a question about the stage two qualifications. I'm not sure if I understood the question, because you were talking, I think, about the B degree qualifications and the B tech qualifications, and certainly Professor Hugh Hanrahan is better qualified than I, who's present, to talk about what the requirements are for a B qualification as opposed to a B tech. But my limited understanding is that in order to get a degree, you would get a B degree, which is a 4-year degree at a university, which we would call a stage one qualification, which is your academic qualification. You would then get what we call the stage two qualification, which most professionals get, which is your articles that a professional accountant would get, or doctors do, and lawyers and so on. Certainly our engineers do on-job training, which is a stage two qualification, and after they've completed that, they then are eligible to register with ECSA. The BTEC qualifications are slightly different. My colleague here on the right seems to know more about it than I do. But my understanding is that you would go to a Technikon, or now University of South Africa, and do a portion of formal study, and then you would have to do a portion of on-job experience, then go back to the formal institution to continue and so on. So it was a S1, S2 type program where you would do your formal training and then on-job training before you could actually get your qualification. There was a question about, sorry, if I may just raise something about the stage two qualification. Certainly, as employers in the mining industry, where we provide this opportunity for the stage two qualification, we're very keen that the stage two qualification does actually continue, because we feel it's a vital part for engineers in order to become competent. There was a question about compulsory registration. What do we think of it? There is an exercise going on at the moment through ECSA called the Identification of Engineering Work. The Chamber of Mines has done a large amount of work in terms of the identification of engineering work. We differ slightly from ECSA in that we don't agree necessarily with all the areas where they say people will be required to be registered in order to conduct that work. But yes, on the principle of registration, we do support. Then there was a question about NEDLAC, and do we not trust the minister to appoint the community representatives? Yes, of course we trust the minister to appoint the community representatives. But what we found in the past in other statutory bodies where community representatives have there's provision for community representatives, often the public is not able to access those community representatives. And NEDLAC at least provides a platform or a forum where you can access those people. We're also suggesting that NEDLAC can ensure that if they are the bodies through which community representatives are nominated, that at least they have the expertise in order to add value to the body on which they serve.
But how do we preempt that they won't add value? It's a normative statement, because we don't even know the personalities that will be put there. How do I know that this is not a preemptive?
NEDLAC can set criteria. One is never going to be sure, but at least the criteria will minimize that they the possibility of them not adding value. We've seen in the past that some of the community reps are super. They do add a huge amount of value, and their contributions are really worthwhile.
They too need to know why. Like, why can't the minister set criteria? If you can hear the argument, because the argument that says that people cannot be accessed, it's immaterial to me. If people want to access people, they can. Because there will not be any clause in this act that stops anybody from accessing the board members or the council itself. I don't even think you as a chamber of mines won't have access to those council members if you feel fit to do so. I still don't think it's a substantive argument for us to consider. Because it cannot be the issue of access. Are you saying that their offices will be so close to the public that even if you make an appointment to discuss a crucial matter, you can't even talk to them? And in an event that you can't talk to them, you can't even write to the minister, including members of parliament, to complain about the reception that you get in offices of the public. To me, it's not adequate of a reason why we should not include. But nevertheless, let's hear. I think there's a lot of questions, and we'll make follow-up questions, but yeah, let's take the issue.
Just in response to the NEDLAC issue, it's also provided a platform for mandates. With very often community representatives don't have a platform where they can get a mandate. Now move on. There was a question about funding, and if the funding is not enough, and there was a misunderstanding in terms of the funding. We're just concerned that the funding that is being proposed, the funding model that is being proposed, we're concerned that if there isn't sufficient funding and the sustainability of these bodies is not ensured, it's going to impact certainly on our industry. So we are wanting to satisfied that the funding model is a sustainable model. Presently, there doesn't appear to be sufficient money. Yes, indeed, there may be more money coming in to fund these bodies if there is increased registration, increased members participating, but it's an assumption that is being made. So we would be more comfortable that there's a backstop. If there isn't sufficient funding, what happens? Are the public, the members who pay their fees, are they going to be asked to pay more, or is there going to be a provision where government can step in and assist in terms of funding so that these bodies can provide the functions that they're supposed to do? Madam Chair, you had some questions about the roles of the communities as well. Do we only want technocrats? We need the community. We accept that. And I think that the community is, there should be community there. But once again, we would say, what is the criteria for the community to be there? Are they going to be able to further the aims of the body on which they serve? There was also...
May I ask the question in retrospect? Have the professionals who are there in the current juncture assisted the CBA to function properly? I don't think so. We will not be having the challenges we're having now. So I don't think it's adequate to argue that the communities won't. The professionals did not. And we've got proof. It's a different case altogether. But nevertheless, we'll come back on that.
Is this the suggestion that the communities will assist the professionals to then get these bodies to work?
That's why I said we should not preempt that they will fail in this case, because we don't have enough facts to argue that they will fail, unless if we hear them, because I still need to hear them, those facts, because what you have raised about getting mandate, I don't know what mandate, because the act itself is a mandate in terms of what they need to do. But we'll come to that. Let's get to the
level. In terms of the mandate, certainly as a business representative on many bodies, we do get mandates so that we do represent business, and it's not a personal view that we're putting forward. So we're making that statement in that light, that if there is somebody there representing the community, that if NEDLAC would provide a forum where they could get a mandate and they would be representing a community mandate as opposed to a personal view. There was also an issue about regulations. We made the point that continuing professional development, there is a section in the bill that refers to continuing professional development. We feel that this is very important. We'd like to see more in terms of this, and no doubt this will be in the regulations. But in the section in the bill that refers to regulations, there isn't provision made for a regulation for continuing professional development. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you very much. I think the response actually prompted more questions to me. I don't know, to honorable members, but let me give them a chance. Honorable Matuma.
Yeah, thank you, Chair. You know, Chairperson, as I'm listening to the president and of Chamber of Mines, it seems as if she's more representing ACFA.
No, honorable member, no, let's not even mention ACFA. They've not said a word yet. Let's leave them out. Just talk to the presentation. We'll come to ACFA, I think, tomorrow.
Because you keep on talking
about, I know you have read a lot of documents and you find similarity, but it's okay. Because they can't respond for themselves now, you see.
Mm.
When you mention their name, this, they will just sit there and wonder when can they respond to this.
Well, Chair, I want to come back to the earlier response in terms of how she understands the rationale behind the whole question of this coming up with this new legislation, and whether she has familiarized herself quite adequately with the organogram, the new organogram of the built environment of South Africa. And because the way she has presented this matter, it seems as if she doesn't see any reason why we are coming up with this new bill, as if this bill will do nothing in terms of changing the challenges that have been encountered by the built environment. So the question is that, it's whether you familiarize yourself with the new economic crime. Well, definitely, the new one is not the same as the old one. And there are reasons for coming up with the new one. Even, for instance, if you look at page 3, the functions of the councils are quite different to the functions of the built environment, the current built environment, in terms of giving it big, in terms of its role and responsibility. So I just want to check if you are aware of the new organogram.
I'm certainly aware of the function.
We'll entertain a response later. Let's take more questions here. Any other follow-up questions, honorable member?
Actually, my question was whether the presenter was comfortable with the previous organogram of the council compared to the one that is being suggested now.
Thank you. Honorable Opperman, is there
anything? Thank you, Chair. There was a comment from the chairperson that the present professional council did not assist the CBE to function properly. What is your view on that? And you referred to the in your document, there's need for a larger intervention with reference to the skills shortage. Can you enlighten the House on that too? Thank you.
Thank you. I was trying to look at all the other recommendations we have made. On the 14th of November last year, we were receiving an annual report by CBE. And part of the challenges that we draw from that report was that, one, there's a challenge on issues of transformation. Two, there's legislative gaps. There's challenges of reporting of councils. We're also looking at issues of policy of professional councils on dealing with issues of appeals. We looked at issues of funding of councils. We looked at the AG's report. We looked at issues of accounting lines. We looked at issues of the accounting templates and reporting templates that were different from one another. We looked at issues of our capacity to deliver, issues of compliance, norms and standards of professional counsels, listing of counsels with the AG, and we came to a conclusion that indeed we need to meet with counsels. We believe that we need to engage the minister on the legislative framework. Is this COVID that says? It's here. I'm saying the meeting was the 14th of November last year. Spoke about the legislative framework. We talk about having this professional legislation to be compulsory, which was not. We talked about issues of listing of councils as public entities. We talk about registration of artisans whose role between CIGB and the CBE is not clear. We spoke about a need to look into accreditation of professionals by the professional council. Simplification of registration process so that the list and intervention of challenges which we believed that we need to look at, and part of the issues talked about financial resources. Some councils were reporting that they are operating on a voluntary basis, where people volunteer their services to run organizations. And we believe that we cannot operate in that way. Therefore, we needed to restructure. And I think this explains the rationale why the need for this legislation. It's challenges that the councils themselves was raising with us here, not the minister. Therefore, we took that to see that there is a need for a legislative framework to close the gaps that have been identified. I think I have, on the basis of that, on behalf of this committee, clarified why the need for the legislation. Now, let's talk about the role of councils and boards. To me, it suggests in the presentation that people can only participate on the basis of a mandate. I think to me, it does not suffice. Why do we then sit here and make an act of parliament to direct the operations of such councils if you need to represent a specific community or a specific profession? Because we thought that we are legislating to ensure that there is law that guides this organization, the SACBE. So is this not enough to regulate its activities? That's what you say. Is this not enough to enact a law as a mandate for their operations? I think I need clarity, because I don't understand why do you believe that. Because I believe even people who are from communities will participate on the basis of the role they need to play, on the basis of this act of parliament. Because I believe any public entity operates in the best interest of the public, not the public in a particular sector in society. That's why government, when it takes office, whether you come from a specific political party, but you act at the best interest of society, not the side of your party that you represent. So I thought that is the reason why we'll have boards and councils to participate in this organization to serve the best interest of the entire population in this profession, not necessarily a particular sector. So the community will not be representing the community. It will be there to implement this law. That's what I thought it is. If it's not, I think you have to clarify further what you mean then. That's why I don't understand why should you go to that length if we need to appoint people to serve. And I thought that those professional councils already are represented. There will be individuals coming from there, forming part of the council, but maybe you think they are not, then let's look at the other. That's why the honorable member said, have you looked at it? And it comes back to the question I asked earlier on, was there a policy workshop convened to clarify the memorandum and the objectives of the meeting? Because if I'm listening to her, it sounds as if she has not been part of any meeting that seeks to explain this intention. And I also think it will not be correct for anyone to speak on the South African Qualifications Authority. I think they can do so if they believe that they were not aware of this piece of legislation. They should do that. And I don't understand how come they submitted to us, and how come we submitted them to make a presentation if they were not aware. So I don't think it will be fit for us to discuss that it will have to build its own argument in relation to education and training, but for us to focus on what affects us most, and they can raise their issues. There's an issue here that has been raised, which I have noted. But the issue of funding, at some point I will need somebody to speak on this issue, to demystify it further. Because it seems something is an issue that continue what was raised in this meeting. Yeah, let's take those few questions. We'll come back for further questions. You may respond.
Thank you. There was a question about from the Honourable Maduma about whether we are representing EXCO. Indeed, I'm not. I'm representing the Chamber of Mines.
We're not going to entertain that one. Please don't even respond to it.
There's also questions about us being party to the public hearings that were held. Indeed, we weren't. We were not invited. We were not aware of it. We felt that those public hearings were very narrow. There was also a question about SACWA not being aware. SACWA was made aware of this bill 2 days
ago. I said we should not even debate SACWA.
But they were made aware
I'm saying to you, we cannot be debating an organization that is not here to defend or to give further clarity. It's not here. If I say that they received invitation and you say they did not, I wanted to know whether are you representing them. Because if you are representing South African Qualifications Authority, you can't speak on behalf of the Chamber of Mines. We'll want them to speak for themselves. So let's omit that discussion here. They will tell us when they come before us that they did not know. And let me also clarify, the first time that there's a public hearing is today. Parliament is the only institution that hold public hearings. So that was a workshop. I think I did indicate it's a workshop. So you were not invited for the workshop. Okay. But on the South African Qualifications Authority, let's not even speak about it, because it's not here to respond. I think it will not be fair for anybody to want to discuss on their behalf when they, unless if they request you to open them, but that's another issue.
Well, in terms of the workshop to which you refer, we were not invited, we were not party to that workshop. In fact, the only knowledge we have of this is the bill and the public, the policy document. We haven't had any other discussions. There was a question about the organogram of the new versus the old. We just hope that in terms of the current legislation, that the current organogram, it does provide for integration and cooperation between the bodies. And if it's not happening now, will the new legislation allow it to happen? We hope it does. We want it to happen. But if it didn't happen in the past, is new legislation going to be the mechanism or the catalyst to get it to happen? Where provision is made for it now, will new legislation make it better? We hope so, because we want it to happen. But because it hasn't happened in the past, we're questioning, will this be the catalyst to get it happening? There was a question from the Honourable Offerman, which I'm not sure I understand. It was the professional council did not assist the CBE. I wasn't sure what you were referring to, if I may get clarity on that.
Okay, Honourable Luba, do you mind repeating your question, please?
What I was saying is that the chairperson made the statement that the CBE was not assisted by the professional councils in the past. I would like to know your comment on that. Do you know anything about it?
I need to rephrase. I did not say the CBE was not assisted by the professional council. I said the framework as spending was not assisted. And I explained all the challenges. I went on to look at some of our discussions we had of November 14th as part of why I believe there were challenges. So I'm not singling out the council, not RCC, a specific organization. I think maybe you misinterpreted the question. But you wanted to know whether do you think the current Okaro grant stance, is it helpful?
That implementation happens, whether it be current or new legislation. You know, that seems to be the problem, that we need to implement what is there. Now, if we just bring in new legislation, are we going to go right back to the starting block to implement again? So that's what our concern is, that's the implementation of the legislation as opposed to bringing in new legislation.
I still don't understand what you mean about implementation. What do you implement if we're lacking funds? If the club does not have funds and approach them from a briefcase, what do you implement there?
If implementation doesn't happen currently.
No, I'm talking what implementation. I'm making an example, a specific challenge. Because you see this generalization on issues that we need to deal with specific issues is not taking us anywhere. We're explaining what are the specific challenges that this professional council experience. And part of it is just what I made an example of, that they could not run the organizations given limited resources and personnel. So if you are saying it's lack of implementation, what do you lack as implementation if you don't have personnel as enough funds? What do you implement? Because if you're talking about implementation, let's be specific. What is that you are saying was not implemented? So that we understand your viewpoint, because I don't understand what you mean when you just generally say implementation, when I'm saying there is specific challenges, and I mentioned about 10 of them, that this council was experiencing. So what do you implement if you don't have enough resources? Because you are a small organization and you need to be integrated into the bigger organization. What is that you say will need to be implemented?
Well, we certainly have that with the new legislation. If it goes forward, that it will solve the problems that were in the previous one.
Integration is part of it.
We're hoping that it will.
Yes, certainly. Because we will be able to fund the smaller councils also through the bigger councils if there is a legislation. But you know what I'm going to request, Mrs. Pick? Just for 5 million. Because you see, Chamber of Mines has not attended the workshop. But this process is never too late. That's why we invite people to public hearings to be able to benefit from this process. So I want you to take us through, especially to those issues where we believe there's point of misunderstandings and differences, just to highlight. And part of it is the objectives themselves. I think she deserves that highlighting, so that by the time we leave here, there's a common understanding as to where we stand in relation to this legislation. But let us give her the opportunity to answer the questions, and then we take her through that process. Because of that, I think she deserves to get more clarity. May we? Are you done? Are you done with her?
There's a question that was raised about the skill shortage, that we need a larger intervention. In the policy documents, there was mentioned that there is a skill shortage, particularly in terms of engineering people in South Africa, and new legislation would help to alleviate the skill shortage. And we're suggesting that we need a larger intervention rather than just the Council for the Built Environment. We know that the number of children who are entering grade one and who eventually matriculate, there's only about a third of them who do actually matriculate. Of those who do matriculate, about 15% of them have sufficient maths and science in order to get into universities and universities of technology. So we are suggesting that it's a systemic problem that needs to be resolved from the school system. The further education and training colleges have just introduced a new qualification, the National Vocational Qualification. Their pass rate was actually 9%. It was adjusted to be a 50% pass. So there are problems there. But we're just not having sufficient people with maths and science. And it's not only maths and science, it's communication. It's the ability to deal with universities and universities of technology, the degree of difficulty of the study course that is there. So we do think that it's a problem that is affecting us nationally.
Thank you. I think we we note that point. That's the issue of training should get more attention beyond the issue of the council. I think we'll note the point of further debate that we need more professional people in less than science than other because it's a systemic problem. I think we'll note that. Thank you very much. Mrs. Dickley, who will tell us? Are your all questions answered, Honorable Member? Are you? Okay.
Thank you, Chair. I will respond and my colleagues will add just very briefly. Maybe to start with, we need to start with the challenges of the current legislation and also to respond to the sense that we get that actually maybe the problem was with the implementation of the legislation, but also in as far as the functioning of the CBE. We're trying to demonstrate that actually there were quite a number of areas that needed not the amendment of the legislation, but actually a new legislation. First and foremost, Chair, as everybody knows, the composition of the current CBE is that of representation from individual councils. That makes, and that also responds to the question that is raised by the presenter from the Chamber of Mines, that in actual fact the community representatives in the current in the current bill should be mandated from somewhere. That forces an organization to be, especially at a board or council level, to be defunct, because those individual members that are representing their various constituents, actually, when they get to the organization, instead of looking at the interest of the CBE, that's what was happening with the CBE, instead of looking at the interest of the CBE, but also the interest of the built environment as a whole, they're looking at individual councils. When such interests conflict, it becomes difficult for the council to take a decision. You have a case in point, Chairperson, where a decision that comes out of CBE, whether it goes to the minister or elsewhere, actually you find individual members saying, we have this view on this issue, we have this view on this issue. That causes the organization to be defunct. And when the organization does not function at board level, the whole organization is going to suffer. So that's one thing. And on that, whether we liked it or not, we would not have changed, even if CBE was functioning at best as an organization. To change that problem, we have to change the legislation. That's point number one. The second one is that the councils really, in the current situation, the professional councils, they are independent statutory bodies. The implications of that is that in each and every one of them develops their own policies in relation to what they're supposed to do. So that means that there is no certainty, for instance, if you talk about registration. They deal with that individually. If you are a graduate that comes out of school, you're not sure actually what is expected of you. You think you understand, you go and make submission, you are told something else. That, in actual fact, in certain instances, we believe as a department is not necessary, you know, for the applicants or the aspirant professionals to be subjected to. So you did not have aligned and policies that are clear that every member of the public would be aware of that. And that has impacted, maybe before I get to that, but also the fact that all these councils, they were independent, that means there's no coordination in terms of planning. What the other council does, the next council doesn't know what is happening. There is a relationship, obviously, that we need to build between these two councils. The presenter from the chamber raised the question whether in actual fact this bill is going to result in alignment, is going to result in coordination. Actually, it is going to do that. Currently, that cannot happen in the present environment. I'm sure most people here, especially you yourselves, honourable members, you are aware of the challenges of the registration. I mentioned that there is no consistent policy, there's no clarity, and you never know what is expected of you for you to register as a built environment professional. The second challenge is the issue of accreditation of the institution. The same applies in this case. You know, you never know if you are an institution, an education and training institution, what is expected of you. What the new bill then seeks to do is not to take away the professional, the responsibilities of the professional boards, as we call them now, but also to say in areas where there is a need for alignment, you don't need individual councils to build capacity to deal with that area. For instance, on the issue of policies, as I mentioned, policies, we say, the current bill says the SACBE should be responsible for overall policies, especially at strategic level, and especially as they relate to the fact that the CBE must implement the policies of government, especially those of the Department of Public Works. So you will find that alignment. And we are saying some of the areas that were duplicated in all the councils, in actual fact, now they are going to be consolidated because you are going to have SACBE. There are certain areas, for instance, in relation to registration of professionals that are really not technical issues. At a technical level, obviously, the professional councils will be involved and but once it gets to be an administrative function, it should be done administratively. And again, we are seeing areas of a consolidation there. And we are saying those areas that are overarching, like the registration of professionals, accreditation of institutions, the areas of minimum standards for education and training, those areas should be standardized and to bring about certainty through regulations by the Minister of Public Works. So we see all the questions that were raised by, at least up to now, the presentations that we've had, that were raised by the Chamber of Mines. Actually, the bill seeks to address that. And the point being, the current legislation, no matter, you know, whether you got the best capacity, would not have been able to deal with these issues. I don't know if my colleagues would want to add. Basically, say we think that you know, those are some of the things that the current legislation would achieve.
Thank you very much. Is there any indication that from the honorable member? Well, that brings us to the end of that presentation, but I am still not comfortable with the fact that we could not get clarity as to what we mean about lack of implementation if we did not give specific issues that we believe could not be achieved, whereas we have indicated challenges. But people, as usual, are entitled to their views. But I believe in substantive discussion so that we are able to influence each other in terms of thinking on the basis of facts that we can lay on the table. I still believe at some point there was a lot of generalization of necessarily facts being tabled, but nevertheless, we thank the Chamber of Mines for heeding our call to attend the public hearing. And as I said earlier on, we will also invite people, even if we're not going to carry the cost, to follow the discussions which will have with other organizations and on our own as MPs. As we round up on the discussion this week. So thank you very much for coming. I don't know what time it is. Do you have a tea break? Well, we can have a 2-minute comfort break and then we come to the next presentation.
program. Honorable Chairman, Akona will give you a copy.
Thank you.
Honourable members, may we kindly resume, please? May we kindly resume with the meeting, Honorable Maduma. Honorable Maduma, I can see you're having a very interesting discussion, but we need to proceed. Thank you very much. Honorable members, I felt that it will also be important that, because issues of funding have been raised today, to allow the department to briefly take us through the document that they presented to us, to ensure that those who never saw it before can interact with it before we take the next presenter. May we get a quick presentation on this model? It has been presented to you before. You have seen this document, you have interacted with it. So let's give the department an opportunity to quickly take us through for the sake of our presenter.
Thank you, Chair. Maybe we need to preface the just taking the meeting
be a little bit of misunderstanding about the fees that are received by the councils, the current professional councils. All the professional councils, new or old, when I say new, I mean from 2000 when the legislation was passed, they received the fees by virtue of being legislated. They were legislated to receive fees. And again, there may be a little bit of a misunderstanding that these are not membership fees, they are registration fees, which allows the members, gives the members an opportunity to practice. That's the benefit. They give the members an opportunity to practice the profession, and therefore they are public funds. So in terms of this model that we are presenting here, we are saying first and foremost, currently the department is funding CBE, and we foresee that funding continuing up to 2011, albeit on a reduced level. Then we are starting, if you look at that presentation there, we are starting with 2006-2007, which is the record of what we could get of audited funds. So if you take all the councils and the CBE, those are registration fees that have been received in last year and this year, and that we envisage will be received in the coming years up to 2010-2011. I need to mention, say, that amount that you see in 2010-2011 is about 50% of the registration. We are moving from an assumption that currently the registration is at about 23%. And again, that might differ from one council to the next, but on average, we are saying the registration is at 23%, and we envisage that by 2010-2011, we should be able to reach 50% registration. And again, the reason for us saying that is that all the impediments to registration that we have raised earlier on would have been taken into account, the fact that the system is easier, if there's more certainty, and there's regulation by the minister, and you have an administrative capacity to deal with that. So we think we should be able to, possibly we'll be able to reach more than that, but to be on the same side, we're talking 50%. These are other incomes that the councils are receiving, either rent through lease of building and interest in terms of their investment. We're projecting at that level. The expenses, we're taking the current inflation, which is 10.78, I'm not sure exactly how much it is, but we say if we're projecting that PEP in the next 3 years, we'll be looking at an inflation rate that is 1% above the current inflation. We're talking about 11.8%. So those expenses are calculated on the basis of those expenses, and this is the figure that you get at the end of the day that we envisage we will be able to raise and manage the council. And again, on the issue of sustainability, long-term sustainability, we have mentioned earlier on that a number of issues that are now duplicated in all the councils, now they will be consolidated. And if we talk about the current capacity of all the units, and we're talking about staff being consolidated under SACBE, we think we will get a lot of economies of scale and the reduction of costs.
Thank you,
sir.
Thank you very much. Maybe a follow-up discussion from the Chamber of Mines on the issues of financial implications.
Thank you, Madam Chair. It does throw light onto the funding subject, but it would have been great if we had have had this information before, but not being party to the workshop, as I'm sure a lot of other bodies weren't. I think it would have assisted greatly.
It's never too late, madam, to interact, but I think I felt that you needed to know for the fact that you were not part of the workshop. I think people deserve to ask, because maybe you formed your argument without necessarily having looked at the views, but I think that's why I'm creating the platform to allow you to further look at the financial trends that the department has argued, so that we can have. But like I said, if there is a fundamental issue that you still believe that the portfolio committee will have to look at as an impediment, I think you can do interact with my office, so then we can engage on that.
Thank you very
much. We had the same concern to look at the financial implications. The committee spoke about that. That's why this document had to be prepared for us to really look at, is it true that there will be a transitional arrangement that will make sure that there's no cost implication from those councils that will be integrated for this event. We even said that a percentage term is not enough. We'll have to look at the trends of the growth of the inflation on a regular basis, but it's an issue that will be dealt with on a yearly basis when people are dealing with the budget, I think. But the trend is in itself is expected, because it's projected at a 50%, not even at a 100% level in terms of registration. We will have to monitor the policy implementation, because that's now our responsibility as legislators to ensure that indeed they implement what are the requirements of the legislation. I hope that's fine. Okay, thank you very much. Then let us take Mr. Rakau from Subtaco, submission number 54.
Thank you very much, the Honorable Chairperson, the Honorable Members of Public Works, ladies and gentlemen. My name is Abraham Rakau, representative of Subtago. Subtago is a South African Black Technical and Allied Carriers Organization. As Subtago, we fully support the bill about the SACBE formation. And enclosed are the reasons why I stand here before you supporting the bill about the SACBE formation. I have started my civil engineering studies in 1987 at the Witwatersrand University, commonly known as VET. However, due to hardship and lack of capital, I had to temporarily alternate my studies with working in the Kloof Gold Mine, Group 5, and from Villa and Verba Consulting Engineering firm. Every time after I accumulated enough money, I continued with my studies the following semester year, until I got a scholarship in 1994 to study in the United States of America. Today, I have degrees in BSc Civil Engineering, BSc Mathematics, and a diploma in Project Management. I finished my civil engineering studies in the year 1997 and graduated in 1998. I am currently finishing my studies for MBA, Master in Business Administration, at the Northwest University in Northwest. I made an application for registration as a professional engineer with EXA, the Engineering Council of South Africa, in the year 2006. On the 17th of March 2008, 2 years after, when I asked them how far are they with the process, they told me they're still busy with it. I then asked to speak to the CEO, but was referred to the director, Mr. Estian Anson. The name might not be correct, the misspelling, who told me that they are still busy with the process. For your information, it has been 10 years since I have been practicing engineering, both in the United States and South Africa. I obtained my BSc civil engineering degree 10 years ago, in the year 1998. EXO is delaying the registration of black engineers and enable the white engineers to continue to dominate in this engineering profession. I view this as discrimination because it disenfranchises the black engineers from acquiring job opportunities. Again, Exxon utilizes private engineers to help it process the applications of all the engineers that applied for registration. This regrettably also contributes to the delay in a sense that those private engineers that EXA uses tend to become biased and discriminatory and hence apply the delay mechanism. My assumption is that most of the private engineers that EXA utilizes see the applicants as threats to their businesses because tomorrow they will be competing jobs with them. Overall, this process is discriminatory against black engineers, and it shows to be serving the interest of the white engineer. Looking at our history, where we come from, engineering profession in our country, South Africa, has always been political and discriminatory against black people. It must be noted that black people were never allowed to enroll for engineering studies at the tertiary institutions, I mean the universities, until during the late 1970s. Even so, they were required to obtain a letter of approval from the superintendent in their local town council office. Oftentimes, the superintendent, who were white, would refuse or disapprove the students from enrolling. Obtaining a letter of approval from the superintendent was part of the requirement for registration into the faculty, the engineering faculty, for any engineering discipline. Besides, getting good grades in the matriculation examinations, one would not be allowed to enroll for any engineering studies unless the letter of approval from the superintendent is attached with the application form or stuff needed personally. Obtaining the approval letter from the superintendent was the first and the immediate phase of contact with the discriminatory practices against the black people to prevent them from pursuing their dreams of studying engineering. They would advise them to pursue their studies in any other different field and not engineering. Those few students who were lucky to get letters of approval from the superintendent in their town council offices and got lucky again to be admitted for their studies in engineering were faced with the unwelcoming environment in the different tertiary institutions. Discriminatory practices in the institutions were rampant. Each year, during the month of September, and I personally experienced that, and my fellow students who were with me in the institutions would testify on that. Each student during the month of September, most of the senior staff, including the head of departments in the Faculty of Engineering, would converge for boardroom meetings at EXO. Among issues that were discussed was how to regulate the number of enrollment of black students aspiring to study engineering. Subsequently, they would also discuss how to regulate the number of students from graduating in the field of engineering. Their personal assistants and secretaries gave us such information, knowing that there was nothing we could do and never believed that days like these ones now would never come. It was said openly and freely. EXA played a pivotal role in upholding the ideals and policies of the previous apartheid government. Exxon was a machinery of the previous apartheid government and helped to perpetuate the oppression of the black people. It was the same institution that helped the previous apartheid government in making sure that they prevent black people from qualifying as engineers. All this was the constant daily struggle that the black engineering students were faced with at the tertiary institutions. All these practices that Exxon indulged themselves in or played or committed or obliged or rather played led to a high number of black engineering students dropping out of studies of engineering fields. Other students went overseas to pursue their engineering studies in other countries. Overall, all the discriminatory practices and oppressive exercises against the black engineering students were planned in the Exxon boardroom. Registration as a professional engineer. I would like to touch on this, looking at this registration as a professional engineer from what is happening in South Africa versus my experience or my knowledge that I've seen offshore in the United States. In the United States of America, there are two processes that the graduate engineers may use in order to register as professional engineers. The first process is when a graduate engineer writes an engineering board exam and then works for a period of 2 years practicing engineering. I must highlight it. What this means basically is that the first thing that will make one a professional engineer is that you have to have the academic qualifications necessary. That's number one. The institution that you got the qualification from is an accredited institution. That's what they'll confirm there. After qualifying, getting qualifications as an engineering graduate, they will require you to get some experience because they know that, okay, you have fulfill the fundamentals and the basics of engineers. They know that you have the necessary capabilities of practicing engineers. But what they would expect from you in addition to that is to have some more practical experiences in the engineering field. And then after that, you register as a professional engineer. The first process is when a graduate engineer writes an engineering board exam and then works for a period of 2 years practicing engineering. Thereafter, you automatically obtain professional engineer title. The other process is when the graduate engineer opts to work for a period of 4 years practicing engineering and then apply for a registration as a professional engineer. What this basically says is that you have your qualification, you have your degrees, or you have your diploma. What they need now is some work experience. How this works is that if you have a bachelor's degree, you have a gateway to professional registration. If you have diploma qualifications, then you're going to be a technician. You're going to register as a professional technician. That's all right. And then all you need to do now is just get experience. That's all that is required. I opted for the process of writing the engineering board exam. Fortunately, I managed to pass it. All that was left for me to do was to work for a period of 2 years and then obtain the professional engineer title. Those students who didn't want to wait longer, working for 4 years, there's a shortcut to that. You can write the board exam and then the board exam cuts the process in half. Then you're going to work for 2 years, and then you get automatic registration. Or if maybe you're not in a hurry for registration, then you can work for full 4 years, and then you get the automatic registration. Fortunately, I managed to pass it. All that was left for me to do was to work for a period of 2 years and then obtain a professional engineer title. In essence, I am a qualified professional engineer because I have also worked for 10 years practicing engineering. My engineering experience ranges from the design formulation, project management, and construction monitoring of various civil and structural engineering projects. I have been involved in projects such as the design and construction of the Bell South telecommunication fuel tank program, whereby I was responsible in the installation and upgrade of the fuel tank stations for Bell South in the 9 states where Bell South operates. And those states are Alabama, Florida, Georgia, Kentucky, Louisiana, Mississippi, North Carolina, South Carolina, and Tennessee. This project, you know, the way I phrase it, you can take it very simple, but it's a big project because that involves setting up fuel tank stations. Bell South is a, I would compare with Telkom. It's a telecommunication company. It's big. It operates in 9 states in the East Coast side of the United States. And then, so what they do is that with this program, that they have decided when we embark on this program, they have decided that they need to have their own private filling station in all 9 states, and those filling stations would serve their vehicles for their operations. I was also involved in the design and construction management of the Atlanta Jewish Community Center project in Dunwoody, Georgia. I was also involved in the scheduling and construction management of the Louisiana Football Stadium. I had the opportunity to gain profound, valuable, and well-rounded experience through the B.S. Constant Incorporated Company. I got rotated within the industry in order for me to obtain a broader insight into the understanding of the engineering discipline. In the 1960s and 70s, graduates, which were white graduates, registered as professional engineers within one year period after graduating from universities. During that period, there were no black engineers I have heard or read of. I have no knowledge of any black engineer at that time. EXA used to perform the registration processes very quickly. But now, since there is a wave of black engineering graduates tapping into the engineering industry, EXA delays the registration processes. In this current political dispensation, the government needs more engineers to help with the infrastructural development of the country. EXA utilizes the services of private engineers to help it process the applications of all the engineers that apply for registration. This, to me, constitutes an unfair practice because the applicants would be viewed as threats to their businesses. Tomorrow, there would be competing jobs with them. They, however, would most probably tend to discredit and disapprove and make it impossible for the applicants to register. The EXA operational department is poorly managed. It's poorly managed because I cannot see the institution holding people at random. You know, people have the qualification and they're holding them at random and then putting their life in jeopardy, and they can't even do their registration processes because they don't have funds, they don't have the resources to do that. And as a matter of fact, they're also discriminatory. It consists of the white apartheid, previous white apartheid people from the previous regime. That's what it comprises of. It's an institution of the previous apartheid government. At this time, we need a body that would accommodate all the people of South Africa, regardless of the color, sex, and the origin, where all the engineers would have pride and satisfaction in associating with such an institution. They, however, would most probably tend to discredit and disapprove and make it impossible for the applicants to register. The ex-operational department is poorly managed. The HDI, historically disadvantaged individual, may also be the contributing factor for the delay. To delay the applications and give the white engineers more time to continue to dominate in this engineering industry. What I mean about that is we have the HDI clause in the public works that gives the previously disadvantaged individual the opportunity to get into the market and practice and then gain some economic muscles and power back to the community. But because the operation in the EXA is poorly managed, this to the white engineers is not a problem. It is a problem to us, black engineers, because this is the time when we need to tap into this market to reverse the imbalances of the previous apartheid regime that they supported. Effects of the government are the big problem. The alleviation of the engineering skills shortage that the government is trying so hard to circumvent is ambushed and made to fail by ELSA through sabotage. Whereas our government is encouraging fellow South Africans, especially the black people, to study engineering, since we are the ones in the minute small numbers in this profession. ELSA, on the other hand, deliberately drags and delays the registration of qualified black engineers. ELSA nullifies the progress that our government is making. I would attest to that. You must look at the ELSA database since 1994 up to date. You will find that there are more white engineers that are registered in ELSA than black engineers since 1994 up to date. I'm not talking about the 1960s, that's the time and period when they were fast-tracking the registration of their fellow white counterparts. Affirmative action is a process that is enshrined and adopted in a constitution to try to bridge the gap and the imbalances that the previous apartheid government created. There is a significant number of black graduates who may be deployed to carry out some certain tasks in the industries like ESCOM, etc. ELSA is disabling those graduates from functioning and therefore sabotaging the government. It wants to make the South African people to believe that our government is failing, whereas it is handicapped by ELSA. Currently, there is a huge outcry of service delivery throughout our country. In order for this program to be successfully implemented, a significant number of engineers is needed. The engineers who can be entrusted to carry out those needed services. The graduate engineers have to be trained and registered very quickly and be deployed in various different tasks. ELSA and its private engineers are only focusing in the protection of the cake for their white engineers and make sure that there are few engineers in the cake business, the cake business. Overall, this mechanism that is practiced by ELSA shows that ELSA are the gatekeepers. They are not the people that have been entrusted to ascertain the qualifications of engineers. They are the gatekeepers. We don't have faith in them. The broad-based black economic empowerment program that our government has implemented will not be able to function properly. ELSA delays the registration of black engineers so that they remain employed by the white engineering firms forever. Opportunities like this come once in a lifetime. And tomorrow, those black engineers might not be able to have their own companies. You know, this is very important. What I'm saying is that, you know, the longer it takes for black engineers to register as professional engineers, the better it is for the white engineers. I'll tell you why. Because tomorrow, those very same white people will be complaining that we have affirmative action that is taking too long, that has been implemented for too long. And the longer the sabotage of, or disenfranchise our black engineers, the better for them. They don't worry about the black engineers getting accreditation or the white engineers not registering. The delay tactic that EXA uses only strengthens the economic muscles of the masculine of the white engineers. The delay in white engineers in this time does not translate into any kind or form of laws because the HDI does not include them. Even people who do not have matriculation certificates are in the construction business this time. Our government has roped them in so as to create job opportunities for them. The engineers are the ones that make sure that every single project is successfully executed until completion. However, I believe that there was an oversight by our government on excess credibility. In conclusion, a new body has to be formed. That is why we support the bill for the new legislation for the formation of the SACBE. A body that will be in line with the current political dispensation. A body whereby every engineer across racial line and sex would find it appealing to associate with. This will be the body where every engineer will register with. That is the reason why I fully and Subtago fully support the formation of the FACB. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mr. Rakau. Honorable members, hear the presentation. May we kindly interact? Can I have any indication? Honorable Appellant?
Yeah, Chairperson, thank you very much. I don't know, your ruling previously was that we cannot engage on SACWA, for instance, because SACWA is not present, and for all practical reasons, EXA is not present here today. So I don't know how we will engage on this whole presentation.
Yes, honorable members, you are right. I will be consistent, but we look at the principle. I believe that the principle that Mr. Rakau is raising is transformation of institutions in the country, so let's only engage ourselves in relation to transformation. It's an issue that we ourselves have spoken about. It's not a new issue, I believe. We have said in this meeting, our gatherings, that there is a challenge of transformation, of ensuring that we empower people who want to get into this industry to have access. And we have talked about the long process of registration. We said that in our meeting. So I think the presentation is in line with that principle. So let's rather engage ourselves to the principle that Ms. Andy acts as an institution. So I think questions will relate to the principle that Ms. Andy say an organization in this case, ACSA. So before I give to Honorable Maduma, is there any question that you perhaps wanted to ask, Honorable Member?
My problem is that ACSA is the culprit according to this presentation, not in line with the transformation. And I need explanations from that body because all the alteram partem rule applies here. If you accuse a specific body, they must have the right to respond to that. I don't think we can address the issue in isolation. Thank you.
Well, Honorable Member, I think... Unfortunately, they are here, so tomorrow when we engage with their presentation, I think the Honourable Member is free to ask them questions that relate to transformation. I think they've also noted it. If they need to respond to it, they can do so. Honorable Maduma.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, I fully agree with you that let's be consistent in terms of the procedure of this meeting, and therefore this presentation, by and large, is raising the situation around the question of restoration to EXA. And the content of this presentation does assist us in terms of the transformational agenda that we're driving as Parliament, because it begins to assist us in terms of what makes us to believe that we need to restructure the Built Environment Council to realign itself in terms of taking responsibility in terms of its new organogram. That would also assist in terms of administering the registration, because we have now this state, it's a council that is responsible now, that is a Built Environment, South African Built Environment Council, responsible for the registration of other councils. And therefore, it will be able also to assist us in terms of dealing with these bottlenecks in terms of those various councils for the restoration of the children. So the point that one is raising, that without going in depth or in the content of this presentation, it does support the idea of transforming the Built Environment Council in line with the vision that we have as a state in terms of transforming other councils. So the point is that, Chairperson, I think Mr. Rakau has said a mouthful in terms of at least our vision as the state also in terms of transformational agenda. Thank you.
Thank you. Honorable Memoni.
Thank you, Chairperson. Actually, my comrade Magdum has covered.
Thank you. Honorable members, I think it's given that there will be fewer questions because I think the presentation is straight to the point. It's related to issues of transformation. I think we know for a fact that in the country we have had a lot of challenges in relation to how we integrate our society. But I think it is very clear that part of the objective of the bill is to address also issues of transformation. So I think this matter has been taken into account, and the frustrations that individuals feel around this matter are taken into account. And it is therefore the responsibility for our government to ensure that we bring a balance in society. Especially recognition of skills is imperative. And in an event where we experience challenges, it is up to this legislature, Parliament of South Africa, to ensure that we enact laws that will create an enabling environment for everybody to participate in the economic growth of the country. So that those issues are taken into consideration, and I think we will still, because I still believe at some point, not through this legislation of course, but this committee of parliament will take it upon its sleeves to evaluate the department in terms of the transformational agenda. We'll look at all entities reporting under public works, how far they have implemented this, so that when we deal with submissions of this nature, we narrow it to details, so that we indeed check whether we are succeeding in terms of what has been enshrined, even in our own constitution, because issues of transformation is a constitutional imperative. So we will take that responsibility to ensure that we also look into these issues and we are able to report to Parliament, because I think at some point we look at the data of all, not only ICSA, we look at all CIDP, ACRIMINES, we look at everybody to ensure that indeed we make sure that government is able to achieve the constitutional imperative that formulates policy and creates an environment for oppression. So thank you very much. Honorable Member, this brings us to the last presentation of the day. I was told that Investor of Johannesburg is not going to make it for today. So we were supposed to receive tea. I can see it's coming in now. I don't know. But I think we are early for lunch. So I'm told that our lunch is here. She's bringing our lunch. So thank you very much for today's meeting. Ladies and gentlemen, those who are still around can join the meeting tomorrow, and on the other days they can do so, but at their own expenses. We will not be in the position to foot the accommodation bill and all that. So please, honorable members, thank you very much for the meeting. Let's meet tomorrow morning. Is it the same room? Is the same venue, the same time? So let's break for lunch. Thank you.
Mr. Blanche.
Okay. Mr. Blanche.
Blanche, yeah.
Blanche.
Yeah, Lusaki Blanche. That was the member that it wasn't, now it wasn't there.
Okay.
Yeah, because I just looked at your notes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Now tell me.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know whether I should now approach the lady from the Chamber of Mind and the server call for electronic. But I think you're not supposed to know that.
Well, speak to. Hey, I don't know. I just know in terms of my stuff.
Mm.
No. I don't know about the baby. Let's put it that way. Yeah. I don't, as I say, I just know in terms of research. And it clearly says research unit. No. And they know it.
Okay.
But I don't know about the other things. Yeah. I'm sure the other things. I don't know, you see. But I know that. That's what I'm saying. I know that the research unit has got a clear policy, clear statement, clear statement. And I mean, you know, it happened with another document of ours from Safety and Security. They put. They got information on the understanding that it's confidential.
Mm.
And PNG put it online. They had to apologize left, right, and center to the commissioner. It was confidential, but PNG stated that PNG said confidential, and PNG put it on, and then they had to apologize. So, this is what I'm saying, that People take these things so lightly, and the thing is, if they do that all the time, we're not going to get the information that we need, because people are going to say you are a risk with our information, you're a security risk. We sign, you know, we have to sign security forms in terms of information. And the kind of people that we work with is sometimes very simple. And we do, as I say, get it on the basis where we say, yes, we understand it's confidential.
Yeah.
So, but then we, as I say, we also like trust PNG and say, look, please. And then PNG does this to us. So I'm not saying PNG in general.
Yeah.
I'm saying we work with PNG on the understanding, and then someone there just decides somehow or other that rule doesn't apply to you.
I've been there for a week.
Yeah.
And I don't have a clue what's going on in terms of how the whole thing is like run. You know?
And it's wrong, and they must tell you up front how it runs so that you don't get into a strange situation as well. Because I noticed, look, some committees have a specific way of dealing with information. They say it's okay.
Yeah.
You know, then you know. But it's also the same with the different committees. Like, as a signing this committee, even the previous chairperson, they said, unless the chairperson said, this information must be put online.
Yeah.
The chairperson said, that was a previous chairperson, because of the way, any information, because they did not realize which was confidential and which wasn't.
Okay.
So then they put it on.
Do you think I should ask the suppliers if there's any official position about anything going online?
I think so. Then at least you know.
Okay.
Then at least you know, and then at least you can also say when they do it, when
right.
they say to you, where's the information you should say.
Okay.
Then at least you're covered.
Thanks,
yeah.
Thanks for helping me out.
Okay. Because, I mean, I know it's not your issue. You also come then when they say, where's the info? You know,
yeah.
Then at least you can say, I forgot to. And
what I'm trying to get at is how important it is.
Yeah.
Maybe I should just try and get the particulars of the people at the event.
Yes.
Yeah.
And as I say, speak to the chairperson, and then you'll get her position, and then you know, and then when you speak to your person at PMG, then you can say this is the position. And then you'll get her.
Ya sen ya.
You bring another. Thank you. Thank you. Do you have the annual report of the department?
Yeah,
that'll help you.
Deputy Director
General. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Help me a bit. I don't understand. Can you help me after this electronic copy from Mr. Rakal or this lady?
Okay, I'm not sure if you
have Mr. Rakal,
but yes.
But I don't know if you
have. No, I can email them to Fumza.
Will you?
Yeah.
What is the lady from Time of Mind? What is her name? They forgot your name on the trainer's menu manual. Yeah, yeah, check with our court. So the way I understand this meeting continues until tomorrow morning. Perhaps be on the Chamber of Mines report.
I'm glad to see you were whenever I talk to the arena. Yeah. Mm. Okay. So see you tomorrow. And I'm very good. but no hungry.
My problem is the chairperson should have said, Rakao, have you gone through the appeal procedure of the body you're accusing?
Exactly.
What happened?
But if he does it, then we must expose him.
So,
what really happened?
go through the whole document.
Ja, weil das ist vor allem der Kurve-Kopf, ne? Das ist
ja nicht
extra. Ja, ja,
thank you. Do I have to use the word to come down to be taken by one?
Yes.
I don't say. You know what happened today? In this technique, okay. In this testing, can I talk?
I must give my thank you.
Where were you today? Have you been here long? Okay. Does it get easier?
Yeah.
Okay. That's all I need to know. Now, what I find difficult are all the procedures we have to go through and everything we have to clear and all the gadgets we have to use. The actual work is cool.
So,
it's
before we get there, like 5 minutes early, and just go hang out at
Okay.
Looks better if you don't ask nicely and
just say,
Can you check already if I didn't do something?
Okay.
Can you go on?